Hello, guys. This is Anna with Audio Theme, and on the phone I have Matthew Morin, who is a lot of things, among which are a really successful coach, consultant, author, and, of course, songwriter who's very passionate about helping other musicians kind of develop their music as a business and really just make a name for themselves and become more successful. So, hey, Matthew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're really, really thrilled to have you and excited to have you share some of your awesome information.
Excellent.
Why don't you give us a little bit of an overview about yourself? You're out in L.A.
I am. I am just outside of, well, really in Los Angeles, just a little east of the city. Actually, out here, my daughter attends a performing arts school, so music and art is kind of a big part of what we do. And I have a consulting company out here. We focus on digital marketing and IT consulting for businesses. And then, as you mentioned, I've written a couple books for a publisher, Pearson, large publisher, and then I write music and I get out and perform. And it's kind of in that vernacular that we really met online, and I'm always offering advice and input for musicians. I always tell people it's, take what you want and don't use what you don't want, because I don't charge musicians for the advice, and I coach a few select musicians that really have become friends, because my digital marketing and coaching really is focused on businesses that the truth is typically have bigger budgets than musicians, so I just want to give back to the community, and I try and do that.
Right, and I think that's great because, that's something we're really passionate about, too, is just really helping musicians kind of build their career and be the best that they can be.
Right.
So why don't you kind of give us an explanation as to maybe how you got into this whole coaching thing and, when it was that you saw the need for musicians, or I don't know if you have a specific aha moment or anything you could share with us.
Sure. I actually do. I've been writing music since I was very young, probably, I think I started playing guitar at like 12 or 13 and started writing soon after that. I've always had a penchant for words. And I I've turned that into a career as a writer, and I write both, like I say, for my publisher and articles, and I write for CIO magazine and any number of things. And so I'd really not done a whole lot with performing, and in 2007, 2008, I went through a trying time, went through a divorce from my childhood sweetheart, and during that time I started performing quite a bit more, and without getting into a lot of details of those dark days, but I immediately started creating a little bit of a following and was asked to play various places around Arizona and New Mexico and was enjoying that. And then I think it was in start of 2009, I was recording my first CD, just a self-recorded, mostly acoustic set of music. And I suddenly had this kind of epiphany moment, because I was already coaching businesses on technology and marketing tools and blogging and what was the early days of social media. And some musicians were asking me for advice. How did you do that? How did you get your mailing list together? How do you, and they were asking for, just generally advice at open mics or different venues I played. And I suddenly sat down and said, I'm not utilizing half the things I tell businesses to. And so I kind of said, if I want to pursue this and use it and do it like it's a business and make a really serious go at something, at growing something, what are the things I do? And I listed out things I would do, like having my own website, growing a mailing list, having product, having giveaways so people could take something with them right away, tracking, contacts and leads, and so I could stay in touch with venues, and that became the start of me really formalizing a methodology, I guess. And it was mostly personal and just based on advice I was giving to musicians at the time.
Great. You know, we had a conversation before about some of the strategies you use with your business clients that you've kind of converted over into the music world. And we actually wrote a post about that about a month ago that kind of piggybacked off of some of your ideas and things we talked about were developing the mailing list and doing what you call house concerts, which is something that I hadn't really heard of before, but I think is a fantastic idea. So could you delve into that a little bit?
Sure. It's kind of funny. So the first thing that I try and say, and we, you and I have spoken about this before, is this idea that if you want to do something with your music, you need to think of it in terms of being an artist and entrepreneur. And I'm not the only person saying this, and you hear that message a lot. And some musicians have pushed back against it, some songwriters. Now, the first thing I want to say is if what you want to do is just write some songs and it's for your pleasure and you don't really care if they get played or anybody does anything with them, then, you know, great. Like, that you don't need to do any of this. It's not a requirement. This is if you want to do something else, you need to shift a little bit or at least adopt some of the skills, unless you have the money to pay somebody to do all of it, which most musicians, most people don't. So you're going to have to learn some of these things. So that's the first thing. The second is, I think, you know, and there's kind of this discussion that is ongoing where musicians complain about the fact that, oh, venues should pay you for your talent and the time you put into learning your craft. And it sounds really good, but I sometimes try and point out to the musician a couple things. One is, maybe you're not as good as you think you are. I know that's a harsh message, but have you really... Are you a star performer? Are you bringing people to the venue? Because when you think about it, you know, think about a restaurant. Just because they purchased an oven, just because they know how to use it, doesn't mean you're going to go there and eat. They actually have advertised. They spend thousands of dollars a month on advertising, thousands on promotion. Then they hire staff. They have rent on the facility. And I always tell musicians, are you putting that much into it? Are you advertising what you do? Are you promoting what you do? It's beyond just having the tools. It's beyond being able to play the tools. Are you out there promoting what you do? And so I'm not, and believe me, we'll talk about pay to play. I don't believe in that at all, but I do believe in pay to promote, meaning you're going to have to promote what you do in one way, shape, or form. And so I always tell musicians, just think about that when you're going to a venue. They don't make a penny. We do consulting work for a couple restaurants, and they might purchase, I know one has an oven, two ovens. Those ovens run between $20,000 to $35,000 a piece. That's before they even make a single product. Okay. Then they have to have people who run the ovens, and they have to have the facility, and they have to have, you know, the signage on the outside of their building. And all I'm trying to point out is a venue is not necessarily making money because it exists. They might be struggling, just like any musician might be struggling, and they're struggling on a bigger scale. It's an interesting dynamic. And so I tell musicians, don't be upset if you're asked to play for exposure or they're just offering food. Analyze the opportunity for what it is. Maybe it's a great opportunity, maybe it's not, and it's fine to draw a line, but don't assume just because a venue says, yeah, we let you set up and play, you can play for tips and we'll feed you, that they're ripping you off and making all this money on the side. If you're not drawing people in the door, what are you bringing them? And I always think in terms of, and it's what we do in our consulting, what value are you bringing your client? Your client in this case is both the venue and the people you play music for. And so just that's the shift I want people to think about in terms of that. And we won't address pay to play, but then on the flip side, there's this trade-off musicians have, and I try and point this out, particularly songwriters, where you've got two different kinds of venues you might play. You might play a restaurant that does pay, and they pay $150 for the night, and you're going to play a couple hours of music, and you want to get your original music out there, but you're playing at a restaurant. And so you're background music. That's what you're there for. And you might connect with a couple people that are listening. There might be 30 people in the restaurant, and they're talking and clinking forks and laughing and having their moment, and you're in the background there, and nothing wrong with that. but you might not really be directly connecting with anybody. And I've had those venues where you're, you know, those nights where you're playing, and it seems like nobody's listening. Now, as people walk out, they might say, oh, you sounded really good, and give buddy a tip, and but they're not really becoming fans of your music. And then you have the other venues that are maybe smaller listening venues. And those venues are really cool, but you might not have the same audience, and you might be engaging 4, 5, 6, 7 people to start, but at least they're listening. They're there for you. And somewhere between that world, or maybe the best of both worlds, is this idea of house concerts. And I can't remember how I found out about them originally, but house concerts are, it's not a party. It's not where you're playing background music. It's where a host brings you in, invites their friends and people they reach out to, and they come to listen to a musician. They're there to support the art. They're there to support the musician. And generally speaking, it's done on a donation basis. But your opportunity to earn some money, people might donate between $10 and $20 and buy some merchandise. And so maybe you make $100, $200, $300, $400 playing to a captive audience that is there to listen to the music. And that's kind of a magical place for a songwriter to be, because you're directly connecting, they're listening to the songs, that they're probably going to get on your mailing list. It's a real sweet spot. So that's kind of the idea of the house concert and why I'm very passionate about doing them and promoting the idea.
Right, and I think it's great, because I had a conversation with a musician, his name is Pat McGee, last month, and he was explaining how he got his start, and he just put out his 10th record, and he's been in the business for 20 years, and what he said was he got a regular gig each week at a bar up in Virginia, and he said there weren't maybe but 6 people there, but we got to play our stuff, and we got them addicted to what we were doing. And from there, it just kind of took off.
Right. Right. And that's the thing that you have to understand is, you know, there's this misconception by musicians that they just kind of, they have this wishful thinking that, hey, if I put out a CD and I get it on iTunes, like sometimes that's their litmus test. Oh, I'm on iTunes. I'm like, yeah, but nobody knows you, and nobody's buying random songs for a dollar, and does that dollar matter? And that's where I tell people, you know, find a place you can play where you reach out to some people, have some materials, have some merchandise, and when I say merchandise, have some music they can take with them. And I, you know, we've talked about this before, I'm this big believer in, you know, I do not worry about people pirating my songs, I give them explicit permission. I say, you know, I would say on the CDs that I have, permission to pirate. If you like what you hear, copy it and give it to a friend. If you don't like it, give it to an enemy, right? Because I'm not interested in the next $1 or $10 that I make off a CD. I'm more interested in 10 more people on the mailing list who may host me for a house concert, or 10 more people who are listening and sharing my information and letting other people know about it so that I can grow my audience. Because I don't want to sell 100 CDs and then be done with it. I'd rather have 5,000 people downloading and spreading music and buying 100 t-shirts twice a year or something like that. You know, like there's other ways to monetize what you do, but the first thing you have to do is become relevant, right? And you're not relevant. And I'm not saying, of course, everybody's relevant, everybody's value, blah, blah, blah. We get that. What I'm saying is you're not relevant as a product, as a professional, if you have no audience. That's just a reality.
Right.
So musicians need to keep that in mind and say, I need to build my base, and it's not going to happen because you're on iTunes. It's not going to happen because a venue pays you and your background noise at that venue and not connecting with anybody. It's going to happen, and that's the other piece is, and we talked about this a little bit, I alluded to it, are you really that good? I had a friend who's a vocal and performance coach, one of the best well-known performance coaches in L.A., and I had a chance to be in a kind of group coaching session. That's kind of how we met, and he knew I did the social media stuff. And he called on me. He worked with 3 people that day, and one of them was me. And he did a really interesting exercise about my stage dynamics and some kind of mechanics that maybe I, through muscle memory, just did out of rote memorization. He kind of broke me out of that mold and said, you know, you need to think about this. And the thing he said is, you cannot wait until you're a superstar to be a superstar. And what he meant was, if you're playing and you go to a gig and it's you and your band and you're performing for the bartender and nobody else has shown up, that bartender needs to walk away from that performance thinking, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. He has to go and talk to people about it. Like, you wouldn't believe it. There was nobody there, and this band, this performer was off the charts. It was unbelievable how much energy and engagement, and, you know, I couldn't believe it. Because I'll tell you what, he does that, the next time you play there, at least he's going to have his friends there. Oh, my God, you got to see this guy.
Right.
Right? Or he's going to be telling people from the bar, you know, when they're there, oh, my God, this guy's playing tomorrow night. You got to be there, you know. And you've got to perform like that every time you walk on stage. And if you're not that great, don't ask people to. You can't ask them to join your tribe, to drink the Kool-Aid, to get hooked on the drug. If the drug is bad, they're not going to use it.
Right.
So that's the other, and that's kind of a harsh lesson for people, you know, but if you're still carrying your music on stage and you have it off to the side and you look at it and reference it because you aren't comfortable and don't have your lyrics, or you aren't engaging with the audience, and you're not, you know, you're not ready to really expect to make anything. You've got to up your performance to a very high level.
Right.
So, you know, so those are some of the things that, you know, that's kind of where I start when I talk with musicians, and I write about it a lot, and you've seen some of those attitude-ridden pieces that I write where I'm just kind of saying, hey, you know, you're probably not as good as you think you are. I know that I'm not. You know, I know that I have to take seriously that I videotape every performance and I look at it and say, wow, how can I make this better? What do I need to do to up my game? And watch other people. And you know, it's not that it's contrived. I'm not doing moves and things that aren't natural to me per se, but I am improving my performance, as whether it's vocally, musicianship, and also your stage presence, the whole thing. And then, am I going in there with the tools that really mean that I'm a professional? Do I go in there and have a mailing list and have postcards that they can take with them? And, you know, if you don't want to give them, you know, an entire CD of music, do you have a CD with two songs on it? You know, something they can take with them so they can get addicted to you.
Right. Right. Well, I think we've delivered our reality dose effectively. So what I don't want to do is kind of overwhelm people. If we talked about a lot of different actionable things, but if someone is really just kind of trying to get their feet underneath them in terms of creating a solid foundation to promote themselves, like you said, like an entrepreneur, what would be the top two or three things that they should start on today?
They need to have their own domain. They need to be an individual on the web, right? It's just not that serious to be pointing people at your SoundCloud URL. And SoundCloud, nothing wrong with SoundCloud, right? Or Reverb Nation or Facebook. You want to be the a place that you're building your network, not Facebook's network. And you should have those things. A Facebook page is fine, you know, whatever medium you're going to use, but you need to have your own domain and website. And it can be very simple, but your music should be up there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is you need to build a mailing list. I use MailChimp. I think it's better than Constant Contact, and certainly it's less expensive when you start out. I think you can have 2,000 subscribers for free before you have to pay anything. And so you need to build a mailing list. And the last thing I would say is you need to have some kind of merchandise. And when I say merchandise, have some simple recordings. And, you know, a couple things to note about that is, you know, certainly you can, you know, I record with Reaper at home, but I also go to the studio, and I'd rather have somebody doing my recording for me and spending the money, because those guys, that's what they do. I record my own stuff. to get stuff down, but ultimately, you know, the studio is where I can do a better job of that, and they've got better equipment. But in any case, you need to have some type of merchandise, something that people can take with them. And so those would be the three things: your website with your own domain name, growing a mailing list, and some kind of merchandise, something people can take with them. You know, as much as I believe in social, and you should be using social effectively, in the end, you should be using social as a gateway to get them onto your mailing list and your website. And I guess the last thing I would say about that is, don't worry about being everywhere. You don't have to be on every social platform. Be on one or two and dig deep there, because there's probably enough people there for you to build your fan base. There is the mistaken notion that I need to post something everywhere, and you can't spend the time, you can't monitor it, it's too much work. So if where you want to be is Twitter, be on Twitter. If where you want to be is Facebook, be on Facebook. Whatever that is, depending on your demographic. I suppose if your demographic is, 15-year-old girls, you're on Tumblr, and Snapchat or something. You have to figure out where that is, right? For me, I have a big demographic that's on Facebook. Facebook is the older person's network. I always say that my demographic is women who are 30 to 60 and gay men, and I don't know why that's my demographic, but it just is, right? As long as they have some kind of disposable income, that's great. But you just identify where you think you need to be and don't try and be everywhere. So I guess that was four things: website, mailing list, merchandise, and one or two social networks.
Great. Well, that's just you, right? Always giving us a bonus without asking for anything.
I know. Or maybe it's me. Just Matt always has one more word to add, I guess, or something. I don't know. Yep. But I hopefully they can take that and kind of sink their teeth into that and focus and feel like they are less fragmented.
Yeah. Great. Well, I want to make sure we leave a few minutes for you to give us some links. So say that somebody is really digging what they hear right now, and they maybe have a 6 p.m. window on Wednesday nights. What should they do?
Well, they should definitely check out my website and take advantage of my tips, tools, and breaking the rules video stream. Not even really a podcast, although we are getting the archives of that, and they will be on YouTube eventually. But I stream live every Wednesday night on nmblive.com. It's a streaming website mostly geared towards musicians, and I cover all of this. Last week I covered house concerts. The week before that I covered MailChimp and using your mailing list. I'll be covering WordPress and website at some point. And then any Q&A on tech. So I cover all of those things, and really from a artist entrepreneur kind of standpoint. So they should take advantage of that. They can find out about that. NMB Live is not my website. NMB Live is nmblive.com. But they can go to MatthewMoranOnline.com, and they can find out all these things I'm up to. So they'll see links for free downloadable music in the side. They'll see links for tips, tools, and breaking the rules. They'll find out about my book, my other blog entries. Kind of the whole deal is there.
Right. Great. Well, I feel like we got a lot of really good content out of this, and I hope that all of our listeners find it very helpful. And I just want to say thank you for taking some time out of your extremely busy schedule, I know. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. And let me know when it goes online. I will definitely point people at it.
Perfect. I will.
Awesome. Right. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you, Matthew.